You are listening to an American Free Press podcast.
Joining me on the line from Canada is Paul Fromm. Paul, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, really good to be here, David.
Paul, you know, there was an article in the American Free Press newspaper. It's 1984 on the Canadian border. Free speech activist denied entry to U.S., but illegal aliens receive sanctuary, and in some cases even receive guns. I want to get into that in great detail in a moment, Paul, but for the benefit of the listeners, can you give them a little bit of background about who you are and why are you so famous? And when I say that, I mean that you have your own Wikipedia page, Paul Fromm Activist, and of course there's another Paul Fromm, and I don't think this is you, because this Paul Fromm was a Jewish Chicago wine merchant and performing arts patron through the Fromm Music Foundation. That isn't you, right?
No, what was he whining about?
Actually, he died. So that might be why he was whining. Why did I have to die? So that's definitely not you. And of course, you must be the Paul Fromm on the Southern Poverty Law Center. And we're going to get into that after you explain to the listeners, like I said, a little bit about who you are and how you got so famous and popular.
Well, I don't know about popular, Dave, but yeah, my background, I've been a political activist since I was about 15. My two big issues, I like to say, are free speech and immigration. Not enough free speech and too much immigration. I've been involved in free speech battles going back to the two Zundel trials, the very famous free speech trials in Canada, all sorts of other free speech battles, more recently battling against censorship on the internet. So that's a big issue. And of course, trying to do something about the third world invasion, which will make us a minority in North America by the middle of the century. Canada, with the European founding settler people, will be a minority by 2050. In Canada, in the United States, by about 2041. We've got to do something about it. So those are my big issues. I publish newsletters on both these issues. I have a regular radio show on whiteresistanceradio.com, and I do a lot of lecturing in Canada, the United States, and Europe, and I've been a board member of the Council of Conservative Citizens going back to about 2005. So I have quite an involvement in the States, and also I was, for the last 2 years, Pastor Tom Roberts had the Soldiers of the Cross Leadership Training School in the summer in Harrison, Arkansas, try to teach potential activists, give them a crash course to help them be leaders. And I was a lecturer there. Well, that's my background. Now, I don't know if that makes me famous, but certainly the Southern Poverty Law Center, I guess, doesn't like anybody who stands up for our people. And so, of course, they call groups like the Council of Conservative Citizens a hate group.
Yeah, I actually had the great privilege of visiting the Southern Poverty Law Center recently when I attended the League of the South annual convention. I drove by there because that's in Montgomery, and of course the League of the South was meeting in Wetumpka, Alabama, which is part of the Montgomery area. And I got to see that ugly building there where they planted themselves right in downtown historic Montgomery and built a civil rights museum right across the street. So they're great people, the SPLC, and I want to talk about them in a minute. Let me just go to your Wikipedia page. And of course, if anybody knows anything about Wikipedia, they're basically good for like just the perfunctory information, but they do censor material. I've actually written an article about Wikipedia censoring material. And so you have to take from Wikipedia what you may and just be careful with
that.
But it says here that, I'm sure you know that I'm just prefacing that comment before I read it here. It says you were born January 3rd, 1949. Is that right?
They got that right. Yep.
All right, good. And they say you're a Canadian white nationalist racial List, whatever the heck that means.
I'd go for a white nationalist. Yes, there are some that call me Canada's leading neo-Nazi, which I would reject. But yeah, white nationalist, I'm in for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and of course,
does it say, despite my longtime friendship with Representative Dr. David Duke and with Don Black, that I regularly date black women?
No.
No, it did at one point about, I don't know, 6-7 years ago. The mind absolutely boggles. I mean, usually a lie is based on maybe an exaggeration of the truth. In this case, that particular allegation, I scratched my head to think, I was trying to give people the benefit of the doubt, you know, maybe somebody just got it wrong somehow. But I never did figure that one out. So I'm glad that somehow got dropped, because that was...
Well, it does say that you have hosted a radio show on the Stormfront website, and you have ties to former KKK members David Duke, Don Black, and Mark Martin. And the National Post newspaper, I guess that's your paper up there in Canada, has described you as, quote, one of Canada's most notorious white supremacists. Then it says here that you are the international director of the far-right White Nationalist Council of Conservative Citizens based in St. Louis, Missouri. Are you the international director?
That is true. The other part there about former Ku Klux Klan leader, you know, that really is quite mischievous. Duke hasn't been involved with the Klan for over 40 years. I know of prominent people in politics who were in the Communist Party or were in Trotskyist front groups, you know, in their college days, and they don't have to bear the burden of that. In fact, Duke said some time ago, jokingly, that he was going to get his name changed. He was going to apply to have former Ku Klux Klan leader to become his first name. I mean, part of the media description anyway. But yes, I know Duke, and I've worked closely with Don Black, the third person. I don't know who that guy is. But
Martin, current white supremacist rally organizer in Covington, Ohio, and former Marine.
Sorry to say, I don't know the guy.
And of course, being a white supremacist, I guess, is pretty bad, because if you're a black supremacist, you're fine, and you're given plenty of airtime, and you're allowed to do that. If you're a Hispanic supremacist, that's okay. If you're a Jewish supremacist, you can even get your own country and kill Palestinians. But being a white supremacist, I guess, advocating for the white race is, for some reason, has its own special place in the races, I think.
I like to ask people who say, well, you're a white supremacist. I said, well, what would you want? The opposite of white supremacists would be the support of white inferiority. Are you in favor of white inferiority? Do you want our people to have an inferior place? You know, like as we do with programs like affirmative action. Is that what you want? What I like to say is I'm an advocate for my people. I want our people, the European founding settler people of North America, to be able to prevail, to continue to be the majority in the continent we built and developed. I would think a supremacist really is somebody who wants to go around and do regime change, you know, we'll go to Iraq and make them a democracy. We'll go to Afghanistan and sort them out and make them have a parliament. That, to me, is being a supremacist. Say, well, we're going to impose our ways on them. I'm not in favor of that. I think we should have an isolationist foreign policy and only get involved when our own real interests are at stake. We shouldn't be going around the world regime changing here and so on. That, to me, is what supremacy is. We just want independence to be able to prevail in our own land. I'm not too comfortable with that term, white supremacist, because it suggests trying to dominate other people, and I don't think we want to do that.
That's right. And of course, what you and what I and what people in the so-called truth community are struggling against is, of course, these labels and these attacks by the elite media. So it's not easy even getting this point across, because most people are unfortunately brainwashed by the television and now the internet. And they believe that the elite media is telling the truth many times, if not all the time, then of course we're up against really what many people might consider to be insurmountable obstacles. And I'm in that camp. I think that until these people wake up and view the elite media as suspect and dangerous to their health, then we're always going to be fighting a rear guard action. You know, we're always going to be retreating. No matter how far we come forward, it seems like we're constantly getting hit back. And it's not so much by the elite media, but it's by your average person, your neighbor, who doesn't have enough sense to really think for themselves, unfortunately.
I think there's a lot of truth in what you're saying. I take some comfort from the fact that things are changing in the sense that a lot of people are distrustful of the lamestream media. And a lot of younger people are now using things like the internet as their major source of information. There's all sorts of stuff on the internet, good and bad. At least we have a fairly decent presence there, though we don't have in the mainstream media. You can think of only a tiny number of people that are even partially sympathetic to our message. You know, perhaps Pat Buchanan and might be one or two others, but you know, it's very, very small.
Yes, it is.
And limited, too. I mean, they only go so far.
That's right. And that's what distinguishes you and differentiates you from most of these other folks in the movement, is that you're not afraid to go as far as you feel like going. For me, that's a breath of fresh air. But for some reason, or reasons, for many people, it's not. And they just can't accept being able to really entertain all possibilities. And I think that's what makes you stand apart from the crowd. Let's go to our friends at the SPLC. As you mentioned before, they say Paul Fromm is a Canadian neo-Nazi based in the Toronto area.
That's where I want to kind of stop it. Based in Toronto area, that much is correct, yes. A neo-Nazi. Most responsible journalists, and that, of course, would let out the SPLC, the poverty pimps there, lets you self-identify. They never asked me, what are you? Neo-Nazi actually is a double smear. Nazi was not what the National Socialists called themselves. That was a derisive term at the time. So a neo-Nazi is kind of like a double whack. I'm not a Nazi, and I'm not a neo-Nazi. A neo-Nazi would be one who figures he can improve on what happened 33 to 45. I'm smarter than Uncle Adolf. I think National Socialism was an important movement for a particular country in another time. I don't think what worked then would necessarily work now. And people who want to parade around in uniforms, I give them top marks for courage, but I think it's a complete non-starter. We're not a uniform society today. If you play Mr. Dress-Up, you basically just put a barrier between you and people who might be interested in what you have to say. So I am not a Nazi, neo or otherwise.
And you don't parade around in a Nazi uniform?
No, absolutely not.
Well, they do have a nice photograph of you here, Paul. Not in a Nazi uniform, but holding a glass of wine, sitting, looks like, at an outdoor cafe on the river.
Yeah, that's pretty radical.
Yeah. Wait a second, I can't see your other arm. You might be giving the Heil Hitler salute.
I might have a hidden salute there. Right. that's about par for the SPLC.
Let's leave our friends from Montgomery, Alabama far behind now, and let's get to this article, because I read this article, and, well, I felt bad for you. And I felt bad for the organizations that had invited you to come and speak. But mostly I felt bad for you that they treated you like this. Because that, I guess, is what bothers me the most, is that somebody like you, who's just interested in, like I said, going all the way, entertaining everything, would be treated like a criminal. And I want to read this. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but I want to read a little bit of it. And then I'm going to ask you a couple questions about it, all right?
Sounds good.
Okay. And this was in the latest issue of American Free Press, issue 3132, on page 6, AFP on Homeland Security. It's 1984 on the Canadian border. Free speech activists denied entry to U.S., but illegal aliens receive sanctuary. This is by Paul Angel. In the same week that one illegal alien out of tens of millions currently hiding out in the United States murdered a California woman in broad daylight, U.S. law enforcement denied entry to a conservative Canadian activist who was coming to the U.S. to attend a political conference. And, of course, most of us know all about that poor... Well, I mean, she's dead. I've thought about this a couple of times, that her dad has to live with the image of her in his arms or on the ground asking for help for the rest of his life because of this human piece of garbage that should have been tossed out of the country. But because of the people who are controlling certain segments of the political machinery here in the country, he wasn't, and he killed her. But it says here that, compare that to the way that the Department of Homeland Security, of course SDHS, handled Paul Fromm, who had been invited to be the keynote speaker at a meeting of the American Freedom Party in California. And, of course, Paul Angel interviewed you about this. This was in Toronto's Pearson Airport. You were on your way to Los Angeles on June 26th. What happened?
Okay, I was flying to Los Angeles. There was the annual meeting of the American Freedom Party. It was going to be held just outside of Bakersfield. And so I showed up at the airport on a Friday morning. And the procedure is, if you're flying from Canada, from a major airport, you clear American Customs and Homeland Security at the airport. It's not at the other end in Toronto or Montreal or Vancouver. You go up to primary inspection where they ask you for your passport and your ticket. And they ask you, you know, where are you going and stuff like that. How long are you going to be there? So, okay, where are you going? I said, Los Angeles, then on to Bakersfield. What are you going to do there? I said, I'm attending a conference of the American Freedom Party. And this fellow then says, oh, they're white supremacists. I said, no, they're not. So he sends me off to secondary inspection. Now, secondary inspection, you sit in a big cavernous room, and I'd say there were perhaps, I don't know, maybe 10 other poor unfortunates who'd been sent in there for secondary. And there are about a half dozen Homeland Security people, and some of them are working at a computer, some of them are having a coffee, some of them are chatting with each other. And one of my fellow passengers, I guess, has never been through this before, and he's really antsy, he's desperate. He says, when are you going to see me? I said, it's a bureaucracy. Whenever, he said, I might miss my flight. I said, yeah, there's a really good chance of that. So anyway, finally, they see him and see a few other people, then they call me up. So, okay, I come up, and same questions are asked again. Well, the American Freedom Party, they're white supremacists. I said, well, no, they're not, really. And I went into the same business about it has an isolationist foreign policy, not trying to impose anybody's ways on other people. Well, they have totalitarian, well, the guy wasn't even quite sure. He's reading from Wikipedia, you know.
Oh, Jesus.
They have totalitarian, I think what he meant was links. And I said, well, no, that's not. So what I really wanted to say, well, what does it matter?
Exactly.
You have freedom of speech. Well, you're supposed to. We don't really in Canada. We have sort of kind of free speech. So I have to wait some more. And I was kept for 3 hours. Finally, he makes a decision. I have to withdraw my application. Can you prove that you're not being paid? Well, you know, it's pretty hard to prove a negative. I said, well, I have an invitation here, but I'm not being paid, as a matter of fact. Well, he said, you have to get that information. Besides, you have to be able to show that you live in Canada and have ties to Canada and that you have income. Okay, so I went back to Air Canada and told them my sorry story. They said, well, this is one of the heaviest travel days of the year, but we'll see if we can get you on another flight to Los Angeles. Yes, they said, there's one seat left on, I think it's the 9 o'clock flight at night. I said, okay, fine, put me on that. And they said, okay, so I have my ticket, go back home. I contact the president of the American Freedom Party, and he faxes me a letter with all the particulars that I'm not being paid, where the conference is, where the hotel is, how long it's going to last, all the details. I photocopy some recent tax forms of mine to prove that I earn income in Canada, that I'm not sneaking down into the United States to be a wetback. And I even photocopy a recent property tax bill that shows I actually own property, so I'm probably not likely going to go down there and stay. As I say, I'm a visitor for a short period of time. So I beetle back to the airport with plenty of time to catch my flight. And this time when I go through primary check, they don't even ask me a question. They look at my passport, send me off to secondary. You know, you can see they're waiting for me.
Right,
secondary
right.
Inspection. Now I'm dealing with the first time I was dealing with a Latino, and he said, I'm proud of my Latino heritage. What am I supposed to say to that?
Great.
I just say, well, that's okay. That's nice. I don't know if this was somehow to draw me into an argument or something, but I certainly wasn't going to get involved in an argument about his Latino heritage. But okay. Wow. So this time I'm dealing with a big, fat black woman. She instructs another person to go through all my luggage. Okay. In a bag, I've got some booklets that I want to show people, some newsletters that I'm prepared to give out free. And there are a couple of flags. Okay, I give her all the material I've been asked for, you know, the letters that shows I'm not being paid and the documentation that shows I earn money in Canada and all that. She's hardly even interested. In fact, she gives me this material right back after about 30 seconds. So clearly, that was all just busy work and total nonsense. So she then yells at an associate of hers, he needs a visa. So this guy sits at a computer for the better part, it seemed like half an hour, maybe it was only 20 minutes, but he's plunking away, plunking away, plunking away. Finally, he hands me this document and says, well, you have to apply for a visa. Well, Canadians normally don't, unless they're going down to be a student or to be an entertainer. I said, well, how do I do that? Well, you have to do it online. So I said, well, I guess I'm not going to California tonight. He said, oh, no, you have to get a visa. Go to Air Canada, and they give me a kind of a rain check, I guess. Quite clearly, I'm not going to be flying anywhere. So I have to call my friends down in the States and tell them, sorry, I'm not coming. So that weekend, I begin to apply for the visa. You can't do it in person. You have to do it online. It's very, very, very complicated. But okay, I get all the information and I email it in and I get a receipt back. And it tells me that I have an interview set for July 14th. Now, the problem is the next weekend, that would be the weekend of, I think, the 2nd, 3rd, and 4th of July, I was supposed to go down to Eastern Pennsylvania to speak at the Freedom Palooza. You know, I got the documentation from them. They anticipated that I might need it, that I'm not being paid and where it is and all that type of stuff. So now I'm applying for this visa to go to Freedom Palooza, but I'm told my interview is on the 14th of July. Well, that's like a week and a bit after the event. So on Monday morning, I furiously phone around to try to see if I can get any help. It's very hard to find a human being that will talk to you, get answering machines or go online. So finally, I discover I can apply for an expedited interview. So I do. And sure enough, I get a hearing for Tuesday, the 30th of June. So I'm still hopeful. Maybe if this goes well, I'll get my visa. So I have to go down to the United States consulate. And in back of that is the place where you apply for visas. You can't go in and get information, though. You have to have an appointment. So I show up and there's security out there. So they say, well, do you have an appointment? I said, yes, here's my piece of paper. Well, you're not on the list. Well, I said, here, you can read it. It says I'm supposed to be here for, I think it was 1:15. Okay, well, they go in and there's a big consultation. Finally, they say, well, okay, you can come in. You go through three different steps in there, and it's like a big cavernous garage. Very impersonal, very unfriendly, very hostile. Not exactly a good advertisement for the United States. Anyway, at the second level, I'm told, well, you're not on the list. I said, but here's my form that says I have an appointment. Well, we didn't receive your application. I said, well, what am I supposed to do? Okay, well, go across the street. There's an internet cafe. Do another one. There's another hour and a half, and I've got to be back there by 3. I have a lot of trouble with the application. There's a woman who helps me out there at the, I think it was a FedEx outlet, and I get it done, send it, email it in, go and repark my car so it won't be towed away. Get back, it's 10 to 3, and the security guard tell me, well, they've all left. I said, well, wait a second, I was told here, if you're back by 3. Oh, okay, they go and check. All right, they'll let me in. All the people have left, I think most of the staff had left. You know, it's not even 3 in the afternoon yet. I get fingerprinted, and then I'm interviewed by another black woman. When I say interview, that sounds perhaps a little too friendly. It's not like you and me talking across a table or a desk. I'm standing at a wicket or counter. There's glass between us, and she's talking to me through a microphone that's kind of a tinny sound. So, okay, we chat back and forth for a few moments. She says, well, why are you applying for a visa? I said, well, because I was told to. Here's the sheet of paper that says I have to have a visa. And I said, as a matter of fact, I checked out the section of the Immigration and Naturalization Act that was cited, and I don't see how it applies to me. It says people who are not holders of a valid passport are inadmissible to the United States, and several other things. Well, I have a valid passport. That was never a question. So she said, oh, well, that was just their way of saying they didn't want you to enter the United States. I thought, what does that mean? I mean, that's really totalitarian. That would be just like, well, we've got to say something. Why don't we just put down the Highway Traffic Act or something?
Right.
So we chatted a little bit more, and she said, well, I think the agent had some problems because you were carrying Nazi flags. I said, I was not carrying Nazi flags. That's not true. Then she says, when did you come from Germany? I said, well, what do you mean? Well, when you immigrated. I said, I never immigrated from Germany. No. I said, look on my passport. It says I was born in Latin America. The fact was my dad was in the oil business, and I was born of a Canadian citizen in Latin America. I thought, this is a weird question. Well, a moment or two later, did your father serve in the German army? I thought, what is this, German bashing week? I said, no, my father was a Canadian-born citizen. He served in the Royal Canadian Navy for 3 years, and my mother, who was a Canadian-born citizen, served in the Canadian Army as a nurse in World War II. But we had no connection with Germany. Okay. She turns the microphone off, turns her back on me, and she's consulting with some of her colleagues. And one of them made the body gesture that I took to mean something like, it's late in the day, let the guy go, or something. Anyway, she turns back to me, turns the microphone on, and says, well, I'm going to approve your application for a visa. I thought, great, I'm going to go to Pennsylvania. But she says, we need further information. So she shoves a yellow piece of paper at me, and there are a few things circled. And I know, you know, you've got to be really careful with government applications. Make sure you understand what they want. So I was trying to ask her some questions. She can hardly get rid of me fast enough. And she says, it'll take 3 months. You have to provide this information by email within a week. It's going to take 3 months. That is if they like what they read, or if that's enough information. Like, I don't know, is this just more busy work, or does any of this stuff really matter? Now it becomes obvious I'm not going to be going to Freedom Palooza. I'm not going to be teaching in July at the Soldiers of the Cross Leadership Training Institute. And I had 2 other speaking engagements, and obviously not going to be able to make those. So I called my contacts in the States and told them the sad news. I also consulted a number of U.S. lawyers about this. And they said, first of all, there's not much anybody thinks they can do about it. They say that the Homeland Security has tremendous latitude to screw you around. And some of the questions were really unbelievable. What were the numbers of all the passports I've ever had? Well, I'm kind of lucky in that I'm a pack rat. I've kept my former passports, but I know a lot of people who, when they get a new passport, throw the old one out.
Right, most people.
So that question wasn't too hard, but I thought, what would it matter? Isn't the question, do you have a valid passport today? And the answer is yes. Then another question was to list all the countries I'd visited in the last 15 years. Now, that's why I needed some clarification. Do you mean just a list, like Britain, the United States, whatever, or do you need the year I was there, or what? Anyway, as best as I could, I complied with that, and then there were the addresses I lived in the last 10 years and a couple other little bits of information. But what really stuck in my craw were these questions about Germany and about my father. I mean, supposing the answer had been, yes, I came from Germany when I was 2 years old, and yes, my father served in the German army. So what?
Right.
I mean, what would that have to do with me? Nothing. It makes me wonder if there hasn't been some garbage inserted into my file. You know, I'm not pointing a finger, but there are certainly groups in the United States that are very, very hostile to the work we do. I wasn't quite sure whether they were honest. like they were really trying to find out this information, although I couldn't see what it would matter even if my father had been in the German army, or whether this was to try to provoke me into saying something inflammatory. I don't know. But anyway, so that's the way it stands now. This was on the 30th of June. We're now around the 7th of August. So somewhere, I hope, near the end of September, I will hear back from them. This was just around the time that poor woman in San Francisco was murdered by this Mexican illegal who'd been deported 5 times. He'd committed 7 felonies in the United States. Apparently, the United States cannot deal with him, but they've got a hate on for me. I've never been convicted of a crime in Canada or anywhere else. Never been charged with, never convicted of a crime in the United States. I don't go around murdering people. This really smacked of political policing.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you first, you said that in the Canadian airport, you had to deal with employees of the Department of Homeland Security. Is that right?
That's right, yes.
And these are U.S. employees?
Yes, they're all U.S. citizens.
So the U.S. is camping out in Canada, pretty much controlling the airports there.
Theoretically, it's to facilitate travel. You clear U.S. Customs and Immigration at the airport, and then when you arrive at the other end of Los Angeles, you just pick up your luggage and head off, rather than perhaps ending up in Los Angeles, finding out there's trouble, and get sent back home.
Right. Yeah, they're facilitating travel, all right. So that's one thing. The other thing I was shocked about, well, the whole thing is shocking. And I don't want to say the F word when you say effing with you, even though that's the way I feel right now. I try not to curse. I used to curse more, but I try not to curse because you don't have to. But stuff like this, they're obviously wanting to F with you.
Once this had all shaken out, and I wanted to believe that maybe some agent was just having a bad hair day, and that when I provided the necessary information and jumped through the hoops, all would be well. But that was clearly not the case. And that's exactly the word I wanted to use. That was what they seemed to be doing with me, you know, putting me through these paces. So I guess what remains to be seen is whether after 3 months of having messed up a number of engagements I had, whether I get the visa or whether they just do more of this. I don't know.
Right. That's what I want to ask you too. And the other thing that was shocking was obviously they had conspired before, because then the fella had said, I'm Hispanic and I'm proud of it, which is pretty amazing that this person would just come out of nowhere and say that. Obviously they had discussed you and said, oh geez, look, this guy's a white supremacist, he doesn't like any other races, and obviously anybody white and anybody who wants to relish in their whiteness has got targets on them, because the elite media has obviously told everybody that you could do whatever you want with whites, and comes down from that clown that's in the White House now, that whites are second-class citizens. But that was amazing in and of itself. But I wanted to ask you, Paul, have you traveled through the United States frequently? And if you have, how often have you traveled? And when was the last time you had done that for one of these conferences?
I'm in the United States probably 20 times a year. Now, I get my printing done just across the border in the United States. Doing monthly newsletters, so that's 12 visits. And then I would say I go to at least 8 meetings or conferences a year. So I've traveled frequently to the United States and to many points in the United States. So, you know, I'm quite familiar with a fair number of areas in the United States, Pennsylvania, New York, Texas, California, Washington State, the Carolinas, and Arkansas, Tennessee. And I have never had trouble. I've never had any legal problems, never been charged with anything. You know, I've always, as best I can, obeyed the law. Just never had any trouble. I see nothing other than something political behind this. Now, you have to remember, this is just about 2 weeks after Council of Conservative Citizens got tied in with this fellow Dylan Roof, the one who shot up the Negro church in Charleston.
Allegedly shot up.
Okay, allegedly. Now, our connection with Dylan Roof is exactly zero. Dylan Roof was never a member, best of our knowledge, never contacted the council, never attended a meeting. He claimed to have been on the CFCC.org, that's our website, which has a lot of material about black crime. All of it documented. None of that material suggests that anybody should go out and shoot anybody, kill anybody. The CFCC has never advocated violence. In fact, it's specifically advocated just the opposite. There's no legitimate reason to tie us to Dylan Roof. But that was done. That was done in the U.S. media. And, of course, one of our leading Zionist neocon papers, the National Post, did a big article on me, the Canadian representative of the Council of Conservative Citizens, linked to the shootings in South Carolina. You know, that mischievous word, linked. Well, I mean, even they didn't say, you know, the council told them to do it, or the council did it, or I told them to do it, or the link is pretty far-fetched.
Right, but that doesn't matter, just like an unindicted co-conspirator.
Exactly. The questioning, the two times at the airport and the one time at the consulate, the Council of Conservative Citizens never came up.
Well, that's because they couldn't say it. They couldn't pronounce it.
No, it's probably too much of a jawbreaker.
Right, it's a tongue twister. I'm laughing here, but it's really a sad state of affairs. It really sucks that these assholes, excuse my French, I don't care, because this pisses me off, that these assholes are in charge, and these assholes are able to mess, screw, F with a nice guy like you, a gentleman, who's never probably got a parking ticket in his life. And yet they roll out the red carpet to criminals, not just illegal aliens, but obviously criminals who were behind bars now. That piece of garbage in the White House is pardoning a bunch of criminals. So it's just sad that the bad guys are in charge and the bad guys are doing what they did to you.
Yeah, I feel really badly because I don't think this represents the American people. The American people are, by and large, decent, welcoming people, and this is an ugly face for America. I'll tell you, in the United States consulate, at the front, there's a big rainbow banner because our so-called gay pride orgy had been the weekend before. So there's a big gay pride banner on the front of the consulate, around the back where I had to go for the visa. Extremely unwelcoming. Now, I know a visa is an important document. I'm not expecting the people I deal with to be cracking jokes or being comedians, but I felt the whole process was distinctly unwelcoming and hostile. And most people seeking a visa to the United States are only visiting. There are a lot of Orientals who were there when I was there, and I think they require visas to get in. Presumably, they would go to the States as visitors. They're not immigrating. When you grant a person a visa, you're basically clearing them to visit, not put down roots. I found the entire process hostile. And it was only later, when I thought about it more and told the story to other people, they said, you know, those questions really are German bashing. It's hard to imagine that type of question being directed at another race or ethnicity.
That's right. And of course, we know who's behind that, our Jewish friends. Their fingerprints are all over this.
I suspect somebody had said it's a German surname, and it is. I wasn't asked, so I wasn't going to volunteer, but my father's family first came to the United States, but it was in 1846. I suspect, because the left has occasionally suggested that I came from Germany at the end of the Second World War in a U-boat. Well, it doesn't quite match the dates, but we never let facts stand in the way of a good lie. No. I've just wondered if there was something being put into my file, or whether just somebody independently decided he's German, his father must have been in the SS or something. It's kind of demeaning. It leaves a bad taste.
It's not good to do this to good people, and I only hope, and I hate to use that word, but I only hope that what they did to you comes back to them. Really, I guess the only way that it can is if people are as offended as to what happened to you as you are, as I am. Hopefully people will realize that what they did here really is, in many ways, a lot worse than a lot of other things. Because here, you have somebody who's just speaking their mind. They're attacking your mind. That's the problem. You're not coming in there wanting to hurt anybody. You've probably never been in a fist fight in your life. You're not coming in there with a gun on your hip. You're not coming in there with some brass knuckles, with a knife. You're coming in there with your mind, with a way of thinking about things, with some thoughts. And what they're doing is they are violating your intellect. They're violating your mind. And that's really the worst thing, I think, that could happen to somebody. Of course, outside of, you know, being tortured, physical stuff, which is completely senseless anyway. But, I mean, we're supposed to be living in a civilized society, in a civilized world. I understand that Canada doesn't have the free speech that the United States ostensibly has, although there are some who would say that it's been disappearing, and it is disappearing, and it's almost gone. But to F with somebody's mind, because that's exactly what they were doing. And I got to give you a lot of congratulations because you kept your cool. And you probably kept your cool because you didn't realize they were effing with you, as you said.
By the time I was at the consulate, yeah. I mean, I was still hoping I would get in. When that negress at the consulate said to me, when I pointed out that the section of the Immigration and Naturalization Act that was quoted didn't seem to apply to me, and she just says, oh, well, that was just their way of saying they didn't want you to come into the United States. Well, that's not a nation ruled by law. I mean, that's the sort of arbitrary stuff. I mean, I've traveled extensively in the third world, and yeah, I get the picture. A lot of these places, you better put a few pesos into your passport, or you get pulled over by the police. It doesn't really matter what the case is. Well, I was in South Africa recently. I was told, oh, yeah, well, what happens is they pull you over, and they say, you were speeding at some black guy, and you say, oh, I'm sorry. Well, here's my license. And you put maybe 20 rand, which is actually only like about $5, 20 rand, and you hand him the license. And he'll take the rand and say, well, okay, I'll let you go today. At one point, I was being told about what the South African police are like, and we were right in front of, get this, a Kentucky Fried Chicken. The guy who was driving me said, like, for instance, if we got pulled over here, I would say to the Negro officer, well, I guess you're hungry today. Oh, yeah, he'd say, yes, he's hungry. He said, well, look, why don't I buy you a lunch? Give him, let's say, 20 rand to go and buy lunch. And he says, almost certainly what will happen is he'll say, okay, well, have a nice day and thanks for lunch. So, you know, that's the way in a lot of parts of the world you deal with a shakedown.
Right. I experienced that in Mexico myself. Same exact thing.
You know, we expect a little better from the United States. I'm not saying it was a shakedown, but you expect to be dealt with, you know, under the law, fairly. Not, oh, well, they just put that down because they didn't want you to come to the United States. I mean, that's not dealing with you under the law. If there's a valid reason, that ought to be stated.
Right, but it's a good thing that you experienced that. It's a good thing she admitted that.
She didn't even admit it. She volunteered it.
That's right. She volunteered. It's a good thing she did, because if people think, if there are still people out there who think that we don't live in a country like that, well, we certainly do. Look, when they want to stop somebody, when they want to do something, the law doesn't matter. There literally are at least two sets of laws, two sets of law books, one for us and one for them. We have to follow the law. They don't have to follow the law. They decide who's going to come into the United States. They decide who's not going to come into the United States. Unfortunately, you did nothing. This is a very important case. What you do is very important, Paul. You're a great man. You're a great Canadian. You're a great world citizen for doing what you're doing, for fighting for freedom of speech, for other people who aren't going to fight for it, for the free riders who are just going to sit back and benefit from what you do. Just like they say, the pioneers are the ones with the arrows in their backs. Well, free speech supporters and defenders or fighters are pioneers. Sadly, they shouldn't be. It should be something that everybody should do. But that's why you, the nice guy you are, has these arrows in his back. Because you're fighting for something that we all should fight for. But the first rule of, obviously, political science is that there are free riders who are not going to do what you do. So I take my hat off to you, my friend. And really, I cannot show enough gratitude and support for what you do day in and day out. You know, it's not easy doing what you do because, obviously, there's a lot of hatred coming from organizations and individuals just because you want to think the way you do, and just because you want to seek the truth and you want to fight for freedom of speech, freedom to say what you want, freedom to do what you do. And you would think that in today, in 2015, that this would be some kind of a given, that people would say, oh yeah, sure, of course, everybody should have freedom of speech. But unfortunately, they don't. And there's so few people out there like you, Paul. So thanks for doing what you're doing. And thanks for coming on and updating the listeners. And I hope that we can get you back when you find out next month what's going to happen. Of course, it doesn't sound good because of what you said about consulting the attorneys and latitude that these dirtbags have to do what they do. I don't know how you feel about it, but it could be a possibility that you never again get into the United States. Have you thought about that?
Yeah, it's occurred to me that would be really very sad for me personally. But guess what's going to happen? It's going to happen. I feel really badly that so much effort was taken to, as you say, F with me. Meanwhile, there could have been some really bad characters coming in, if not from Toronto, certainly across the Mexican border. I'm sure you often dealt on your program with the huge percentage of people in American jails who are illegals who've committed terrible crimes of violence. You've lost control of your border. But not because politically active people like myself have gotten in, but because Donald Trump has said Mexico and other places are dumping their criminals on the United States.
That's right. And the United States is, the powers that be are opening their arms to these criminals. But, you know, it's funny. You just reminded me of something before we break off. You said, you write on your website there, the Council of Conservative Citizens, I think it was, you said you write about black crime. And I was going to say, what black crime? Because because the way that obviously it's presented by the Jewish-controlled elite media is that really there, well, first of all, you shouldn't talk about race and crime. That's the no-no. But I myself have spent several years digging through black crime. And it got me to a point where I got so shell-shocked by what I was reading every day for several years about not just the black crime, But the violence and the nature of black crime, I got to the point where I was literally considering them as animals. I mean, I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe the kind of crimes they commit. So just that in and of itself, and the reason your average American doesn't know and an average Canadian doesn't know it, is because the Jewish-controlled elite media does not publicize it. They just had a white guy who was shot in the back recently in South Carolina. And you hear nothing about it. He was killed by a cop for nothing. Obviously, something's going on. But with this black crime, if the elite media presented the stories with facts, it would be clear to everybody that blacks commit most of these violent, horrible, horrific crimes in way out of balance with their numbers.
Yes.
But even saying something like this, there's a lot of people who would say, geez, these guys are racist. No, it doesn't have anything to do with that. It's a fact. The facts are that blacks commit way, way more crimes than whites. And getting back to what you were saying about your white roots, all you got to do, folks, is open up Google and grab a picture from the turn of the last century where you've got the whites who built this country, white Northern Europeans. They created this civilization. That's the fact. And just take a look at the whites strolling maybe on the boardwalk in Atlantic City or in any major city in the United States or Canada, anywhere. And now look at those cities. Don't you get it? Look at it. See what it looks like. Look at what it was like. Look at the civilization and look at what it's turned to. And wake up. I'm sorry, Paul. I'm just, what they did to you, just, it's disgusting. It's really disgusting. And occasionally I'll come across an interview or I'll come across a matter like this where it just really, it makes me sick to my stomach. And yeah, Americans aren't usually like that. And there are good Americans. Yeah, that's true and everything. And most Americans wouldn't do that to you. But Americans need to wake up, Paul.
Yeah, they do. And, you know, the thing that you're saying, look at the old photos, and the same would hold for Canada. What particularly enrages me, though, is that we were never asked. We were a European country, and you probably know this, that every American state at the time America became a country had citizenship requirements, and every American state required you to be white. You couldn't even be a citizen if you weren't. America and Canada were European countries. That's the way they were conceived. In fact, the man who's on the back of the Canadian $100 bill is a man named Sir Robert Borden. He was our prime minister at the time of the First World War. And in the election of 1917, he said, and it was a throwaway remark, Canada is a white man's country. Now, there weren't gasps of surprise. He wasn't denounced as a racist. That was general opinion. He was on the right wing. He was a conservative. But the liberals and the socialists in those days would have had exactly the same opinion. The man who was the founder of the Canadian Socialist Party was a man by the name of Reverend J.S. Woodsworth. And he wrote a book, Strangers in Our Midst. Not only did he not want non-whites, he wasn't even very happy about people from Eastern Europe. He's a socialist. The liberals in the middle, conservatives on the right, didn't matter, left, right, or center. We were united. The vision of Canada was it was for Europeans. It's a European country. We weren't embracing diversity. Well, we have never been asked as people since the immigration revolution of 1965 in Canada and the United States, would you want your country changed? You know, the United States was 90% white when John F. Kennedy was president. In 65, your immigration laws changed exactly the same year as ours. By 2041, whites will be a minority in the United States. So in 80 years, America will have changed. You've never been asked as a people, nor have we. How do you like that? I mean, is that okay with you? If a politician had asked that in 1965 in either of our countries, that would be the last, if he'd said, and I'm all in favor of making sure your great-grandchildren live in a country that resembles the third world, he wouldn't have been reelected any place in the country.
That's exactly right. And a lot of the evidence as to why that happened, fortunately, we can take our hat off to Dr. Kevin MacDonald.
Yes. And not only did he discuss the immigration revolution, but he pointed out who was lobbying for it. I was just becoming politically aware back in 65. And I do know this. The streets of, say, Toronto weren't filled with protesters saying, we're so bored with living in a European society. We feel so safe. We'd like to look like the outhouse of the United Nations.
Yeah.
There was no mass popular agitation. People weren't saying, we hate the country we're in now. And I'm sure it was the same way in the United States. This was all imposed by conspirators at the top.
That's right, exactly. It's very important stuff. We were joking around a little bit, but it doesn't get much more important than this. I mean, this is a battle for your mind. This is a battle for your intellect, and you should take that pretty seriously, that if somebody is going to F with your intellect, if somebody's going to decide what you can think, what you can't think, what you can say, and if that's going to determine where you can go, where you can travel, then that's a problem. Paul, you want to give out a couple of web addresses for the listeners?
Yeah, if you would like to see some of the work I'm doing, if you're interested in immigration reform, go on the internet at canadafirst.net. And if you're interested in the free speech work, you can go to CAFE, and that's CAFE.nfshost.com. So that's CAFE.nfshost.com. Or if you'd like to email me, it's paul@paulfromm.com. Pretty simple. paul@paulfromm.com.
Paul, again, I want to thank you so much for the time you spent explaining this to all the listeners. I'm personally sorry about what happened to you. I hope that we can talk again when you find out what happens next month. And again, thank you, Paul, for all your time and for everything you do.
Okay, thanks a lot, Dave. We'll talk again soon.